Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
It's 6:30 on this 8th day of the 7th month of 2025. A very good morning to you and welcome to the MoneyWeb Now podcast with Simon Brown. I'm Duduzile Ramela in for Mr. Brown this morning. Here's what you can look forward to. Matete Tulare of RMB unpacks rand jitters as Trump confirms a 30% tariff on South African goods imported to the United States. We speak to the Banking Association of South Africa on amended banking code rules. Bongiwe Kunene is with BASA. And with the high rate of two-pot withdrawals, suggestions point to a lack of understanding of tax implications on withdrawals. Advocate Brett LaDouche will help us figure out why. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Your morning headlines, MoneyWeb. Trump imposes 30% tariffs on all SA goods, much of the same for Business Day. As we digest the news this morning, Trump slaps 30% tariff on South African exports, warns of steeper duties ahead. Morning markets, US markets, the S&P 500 lost 0.8%, NASDAQ fell 0.9%. Commodities, gold futures 3,331, Brent 69.33, platinum 1,368, and palladium 1,117. The rand is trading at 17.79 to the US dollar, Bitcoin 107,841. Top 40 opening call expected 173 points in the negative.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
And South Africa, we've got mail a day earlier, but mail nonetheless. And of course, this is in reference to the letter that was sent by the President of the United States, addressed to the President of South Africa, President Cyril Ramaphosa, stating that come the 1st of August, the United States will charge only, and that's according to their words, 30% of goods sent into that country. Matete Tulare is head of foreign exchange at Rand Merchant Bank. He joins us now to look at the overall market reaction. Thank you very much, Matete. And how we looking in terms of market reaction to this news last night?
Yeah, good morning, Dudu. I suppose, look, I mean, Mr. Trump really on Sunday evening in a post on Truth Social saying that countries aligning themselves with what he called anti-American policies of BRICS will be charged an extra 10% tariff, adding that there will be no exceptions to this policy. Now, South Africa, which is part of the BRICS group, said obviously last night that, you know, we're not part of an anti-American, and also that the group of the BRICS countries should be looked at as a multilateralism reform and nothing more. And then obviously now yesterday evening getting that 30% love letter from Mr. Trump. Now the rand obviously weakening on the back of that. And I mean, we're expecting it to remain volatile for the rest of the month and into early August. Now, the problem is that Mr. Trump has said the U.S. is close to finalizing several trade pacts in the coming days. And also, you know, they will notify other countries of higher tariffs by July the 9th, which is set to take effect from the 1st of August. Now, Trump did, you know, impose a 30% you know, tax on U.S. imports from South Africa in April as part of his global tariff policy. Mm-hmm. And we know that Pretoria has been trying to negotiate a deal since May. This is when, the you know, Mr. Trump hosted President Ramaphosa for talks at the White House. So it's going to be quite an interesting one because, look, South Africa still has a significant bargaining position if really one focuses on the mining industry and some of the rare earth minerals that the country can provide over and above its position as a the world's largest platinum producer. We've seen the talks, you know, in that specific sector happening between the US and China. So it's going to be quite interesting to see how that plays out. But, you know, we've seen the market really being jittery, the rand trading all the way up to 1784 in the latter part of last night. So it's still going to be really jittery as we await more news and to see how Mr. Trump levies tariffs across the board with other countries as well.
Right. You speak of volatility for the rest of the month. I think it's the 14th sentence of this letter where it reads, there will be no tariffs if South Africa or companies within your country decide to build or manufacture product within the United States. And in fact, we will do everything possible to get approvals quickly, professionally and routinely. In other words, in a matter of weeks. So could we possibly count this as leverage? What would it mean if we then take our industries and go set up shop elsewhere, more so when we look at what we need to reinvigorate our economies, reindustrialization being chief among which?
Look, I mean, we've seen, the ministers coming out from Public Works, Dean McPherson, saying, look, South Africa, for us to grow, we need to see South Africa as a construction site. You know, that is going to propel jobs. That is going to propel growth. We know our inequalities, and we know that we've got a growth issue. We've seen growth being stuck at 1%. Now, what President Trump is arguing for there in that letter is obviously the same thing that we're trying to reinvigorate our economy. So it's going to really be quite interesting, because I think this is where government and the diplomacies, they will have to make sure that they have, their trade negotiations in terms of what needs to happen and how does it need to happen and what can we put on the table. So it's going to be quite interesting to see how that comes about. I think Mr. Trump's, that line there obviously does push the government into a bit of a corner. But nonetheless, I think all of these things will be put on the negotiating table. Still, the 1st of August is still a bit of way out. So I think we will see some sort of maybe reprieve from the U.S. Administration.
Fair enough. Matita, I'm curious, for the forex market, have you observed risks or returns in cases of volatility, more so when you speak of us anticipating more volatility when it comes to the rand? So for the space that you're operating in, are you observing risks or returns in such cases?
Look, I mean, what we have seen over the past couple of weeks, prior to all of this, the rand was trading at around 17.50 about 2 weeks ago, and then unfortunately, at that point in time, we were around the seventh best performing emerging market currency. We've lost all of that on the back of obviously what we've seen locally with the frictions within the GNU, but also now with the tariffs being imposed on us, but also it is showing you that whenever the U.S. market, obviously, there is something like this, there's all this uncertainty. Obviously, the dollar will obviously be a bit of a safe haven. The rand will take a bit of a hit, given the fact that it has a high liquidity. And obviously, it is one of the first currencies in the emerging market basket to get hit. Make no mistake, I mean, as much as the world is focusing on the tariffs at this point in time, there is still quite a lot of risk out there that we're still alluding to clients. I mean, just a few weeks ago, the Middle East tensions between Iran and the Israel was, something that came to the fore. People did not think about it, and then we saw it. It's now died down. The mere fact that it's died down does not mean it has went away.
Sure.
You've still got Russia, Ukraine. It still hasn't went away.
Yeah.
So there's still a plethora of risks that is out there that we still say to clients that, look, just because it has died down, it's no longer in the headlines, does not mean that it can not come back. So that's where the risks and volatilities are coming from. But we've still got the Fed coming out. We still have the Reserve Bank locally. We've still got this uncertainty with tariffs. It's still really going to be box-to-box headlines. So that's the kind of things that we're looking at.
Thank you so much, Matete, for your time this morning. Matete Tulare, Head of Foreign Exchange Execution at Rand Merchant Bank.
The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
The Code of Banking Practice has been updated, and according to the Banking Association of South Africa and its member banks, an earlier version, rather, of the code was updated to, quote, ensure that banks' commitments to their customers remain in line with applicable law, including the Financial Sector Conduct Authority's conduct standard for banks. The update came into effect on the 1st of July. Bongiwe Kunene is BASA Managing Director. She joins us on the line. Thank you very much, ma'am, for your time this morning. Maybe we can start with an understanding of the Code of Banking Practice. What is it and what does it set out to do?
Thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to be on the line with you. So the Code of Banking Practice, it's created as a guide, and it's a guide that informs customers of the banking sector what to expect when they engage with the bank, what are their rights, what are their responsibilities. And the reason why we've updated this Code of Banking Practice, the first one came out in 2012. In the meantime, there have been quite a number of laws, like the FSR of 2017, then the updated law of 2020, but we still, the biggest business of banking is giving up credit, so we still have to respond to the National Credit Act. So this update is to make sure that the banks and the clients understand each other, that the environment we work in is regulated, and we are using applicable laws to make sure that customers engage with banks in an informed manner.
Are you finding that the banks and their customers actually are finding each other or understand each other? What have you witnessed over the years, more so when we speak of this updated code? Do you find that there is some level of understanding on the part of customers in terms of what it is that they're supposed to do and what it is they're supposed to get from banks, vice versa?
I think our experience is that South African consumers are very sophisticated. But at the same time, the level of financial literacy and just understanding what to expect varies a lot. And we catch that by the number of complaints that arise on a monthly basis. Like right now, I have the numbers that have been cited in the National Financial Ombud for the month of January and February. This doesn't come to BASA, they opened 3,393 cases. So these are customer complaints just for the first 2 months of this year. At just over 3,000, when you compare to the fact that there are 40 million South Africans with bank accounts, it's a small sample. Nonetheless, it's something we have to constantly respond to.
Fair enough. What were some of the most notable changes or updates that were made on the document?
So it's about reflection. The old code of conduct, because it was written to mirror the laws which prevailed before 2012, we thought that it was very legalistic. What we have now, it's just clear advice on the products and services that as a client you will find in the bank. We also wanted customers to be confident when it comes to their inquiries. You know, whenever you make an inquiry, each bank has got a standard that they have to meet. And if you've had a transaction where you are putting a query, we also wanted you to have a clear expectation what is there.
Mm-hmm. In fact, yeah. I am looking at the document right now, and it is very simple to engage with. I guess we just have to do a lot when it comes to consumer education, because you've even got Section 6 that speaks of vulnerable customers, explaining exactly what a vulnerable customer is, right down to that. But should a customer not find joy here, they can also escalate the matter, according to this document, with the National Financial Ombuds Scheme of South Africa.
It's very, the way in which this new one is written, firstly, it's very extensive. We have tried to cover every customer interaction that is foreseeable to us. We've written it also with an expectation that each of the member banks will promote the awareness of the code among their customers. We also wanted to be very frank and upfront about the role of the National Financial Ombuds Scheme, because that is where you end up complaining if you don't derive any joy from the bank itself.
Thank you so much, ma'am, for your time this morning. Bongiwe Kunene is BASA Managing Director.
Give your money the return at once without taking a flight with the Stanlib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Let's focus on this now. This month marks 1 year, 4 months since the two-pot system kicked in. It's been billed as aiming to give retirement fund members short-term access to their savings while also ensuring long-term retirement security. And this comes with a tax implication, of course. By the end of the financial year, at the end of February 2025, SARS collected an additional 12.9 billion rand in income tax from two-pot withdrawals. Money withdrawn from the retirement fund will be added to an individual's other income for the year and then taxed according to the normal income tax brackets. How aware are fund members of this? We find out from advocate Brett LaDouche, a pension funds lawyer. Thank you very much, Brett, for your time, or advocate LaDouche, for your time this morning. Is the understanding of tax implications as high as the uptake of two-pot withdrawals?
Good morning, Dudu. I think tax is the one aspect that people generally don't look at when they decide to make their withdrawals. I think there was a lot of euphoria around the first round of of withdrawals that people could make. I mean, people approached me at church to ask, when are we getting our money? And I said, well, you'll have to wait till September. Right. So, yeah, you had a lot of euphoria about people, and I think a lot of people, and I thought that it would be a once-off thing, that everybody wants that 30,000 or whatever, that 10% that they could get out initially. But now it seems like it's a trend that's starting to develop. If I look at the number of people who made those first withdrawals, a couple of months later started making the second withdrawals. And I don't think the tax aspect, it's more the cash flow aspect, that I need this money to plug a hole somewhere. And I don't look at the tax implications of that decision.
Advocate LaDouche, you've written a piece and you argue there that our collective retirement savings pool has been robbed of 57 billion rand that will never grow tax-free to provide a future tax-free lump sum benefit or a higher monthly pension amount after retirement. What does that speak to, or what does that mean? Maybe let's start there.
Okay. Yeah, I got that number from a recent speech of the Commissioner of the South African Revenue Service. We actually said that SARS collected about 15 billion, and I guess that's about 57 billion that people withdrew. What I mean by that statement is that we'll collectively, 57 billion is gone out of our, let's call it, collective retirement pot. Mm-hmm. So that 50 million will never, if we get 10% interest on that, that would have been 5.7 billion a year for the next 20, 30 years while we are still active members. So what I mean is that that money is gone forever and we'll never make that money up again. And the interest or the financial returns we would have made on that money. So that money is gone. And I just wanted to emphasize how scary it is that we'll never see the benefit of that money when we retire.
Yeah, is that then, maybe that leads to the next question, the net effect of early withdrawals on actual retirement day? So the time that you do need to then lead the lifestyle that you had envisaged while you were still able to work when you're not able to anymore?
Yes, it reduces the money that you have. I did a short exercise of comparing two people who started on the 1st of September 2024, working for 30 years, each contributing only 10,000 rands per month to their pension funds. So all of that, about 3,333 rand goes into your savings and 6,666 goes into your retirement pot. And if that money just grows at 10% per year, after 30 years, and the one person withdraws from his or her retirement pot every year and the other one just keeps the money there. By the time they retire in 30 years from now, the person who took out money out of his or her retirement pot every year for 29 years would only have about 30,000, let's say 40,000 in their savings pot and about 14 million in the retirement pot, whereas the person who never touched the savings pot and made early withdrawals will have about 7 million rand in that pot. So it's quite a significant difference over time.
Just lastly for us, please, Advocate LaDouche, you mentioned the euphoria dying down. In terms of education, is there still some work to be done in educating members, retirement fund members, of the consequences of tax?
I think it's very important. About 3 weeks ago, I actually had the opportunity to have a breakfast retirement seminar for employees of the University of the Free State. And I had about 120 people there, and about 40% of the time we spent on the tax issues relating to the tax benefits of making contributions to a fund, as well as the tax effect. And one question that definitely came up is around the tax of these withdrawals. But also what people don't realize is that from a tax perspective, if you retire, you can take a lump sum benefit, and the first 550,000 rand of that lump sum benefit will be tax-free. But that money will come out of your savings pot. So if you don't have any money in your savings pot, you don't get that tax benefit. So if you've got more than 550,000 rand, you can take out 550,000 rand. But if you only have 100 rand in that savings pot, you can't take out 550,000 rand tax-free if there's no money in there.
Okay.
And I think it's very important. And what I'm seeing is that employers are realizing that they also have to play a part and a role in the retirement education of the employees, and it's not something you can shift to the fund or to the sponsor of a fund.
Okay. Thank you so much for your time this morning, Advocate Brett LaDouche, a pension funds lawyer. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and app at 6:30 a.m. and podcast just after 7 a.m. Thank you very much to Eddie, Nobuhle and Nicole. That's the MoneyWeb Now team. And to you for listening and for spending your time with us. My name is Duduzile Ramela, in for Mr. Brown on the MoneyWeb Now podcast with Simon Brown. We'll chat again tomorrow. Have yourselves a magic day further.
Listen to the live stream of MoneyWeb Now at the same time every weekday. For more business, finance, and investment news, MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.